Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cover story when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, like the multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution, which was designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights, is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. It doesn't belong to the Congress, and it doesn't belong to the political process at all. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for instance, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? It's not afforded to one who is indifferent thereto. And that's because it's a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. And it cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. It's valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. That's a direct citation from U.S. versus Johnson. Now, you know, we should listen more to our judges and less to our politicians and lawyers. Did you hear what that judge said in that statement? Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or your solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, why don't you ask for our free general law CD package at the same time? That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free, and that number again is 417-273-4967. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc. That's for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Hey, we're talking about lying hypocrisy that generally comes from government, but it also comes from other sources. It can come from universities, colleges. It can come from the medical establishment, the CDC, the Department of Agriculture, you know, all kinds of organizations, corporations do this all the time. They lie to us in their advertising. The news media, they're constantly lying to us. And it's managed news. It's kind of like we used to laugh, you know, back in the 40s and 50s about the Russians and their news media, Pravda and Izvestia. What we have in the United States, instead of Pravda and Investia, we have the Associated Press and the United Press and Reuters. And they give us the story the way they want us to see it, the way they want us to hear it. We were talking the other day, they were talking about these polls that come out, you know, that the public opinion polls tell us this or that or something else. Now, boys and girls, these public opinion polls are cover stories. They're paid advertisements. Nothing more, nothing less. There's nothing honest about them. And there isn't any one of you out there that knows for any certainty or any fact that the public opinion poll and the conclusion thereof has anything to do with reality. Now think about it for a minute. They tell us that they go out and they polled 1,536 people nationwide, plus or minus 3%. Here's what the people think. Well, that depends upon whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. It depends upon what it is you want the perception of the public to think about this. Joe Stalin, I think, summed it up very nicely. He said, it isn't who votes that counts. It's who counts the votes that counts. Now, who's counting these people on these public opinion surveys? If you called me on a public opinion survey and you asked me a question, and I answered the question, and you didn't like the answer that you got, you're going to make 1,536 of these questions and answers public. Maybe you called 3,000 people. Maybe you called 10,000 people to get the 1,536 to answer it the way you wanted. Who's to say? And what if I'm calling and I say, well, I didn't like that answer you gave, and so I'm just going to write it down. This is the way I want to write it down. They called you over the telephone. This isn't something that you're filling out. And even if you filled out the form and you sent it in, who's to say that they didn't burn yours? Because they didn't like the answers that you gave. Because it doesn't fit in with what they want to publish so that they can make you believe that this candidate's more popular than the other candidate or this political party or that political party or this idea or that idea. You know, they manipulate the news. They manipulate what we believe. They feed us what we want to believe. And they're called cover stories. The cover story is, we're going to interview you people, and we're going to publish this, and we're going to tell America what Americans think. Oh, come on. Give me a break, would you? I mean, come on. If I wanted to persuade you one way or the other, I would give you a public opinion survey that says 9 out of 10 Americans prefer gold over silver. Or 9 out of 10 Americans believe that God created the earth versus evolution. I mean, you know, I can tell you whatever I want you to believe. You know, oftentimes I cite statistics, but I don't have any real knowledge that those statistics are true, accurate, and correct. I didn't take the information down directly. I'm relying upon somebody else. I'm reading it from somebody else's material. He says that he took this information. He says that he did this. How in hell do I know that's true? Now, as a general rule, the formula that we follow is at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. I subscribe here to a number of news magazines, newsletters, publications, and when we see that two or three of these guys agree, or that the numbers are just pretty consistent, then we can be pretty well assured that, well, that's probably got some merit to it. When I get a report in here on one item or two, I like to, by what authority, what source are you going to? You know, can you look that law up? Can you look that case up? You know, when I say to you, that comes from Hale versus Hinkle. It's cited at 201 U.S. 43. You can believe me because I told you. Or you can go look it up and read it for yourself, and then you know that you got it straight. You know, you weren't relying upon me, a third party in the game. So, a lot of what goes on is propaganda, hypocrisy, lies, that goes under the guise of a cover story that sounds good. But when you analyze the cover story, it should become pretty apparent that, well, it may be true or it may not be true. I already don't know. Now, if we get two or three witnesses, we can be a little bit more certain. You know, you take this issue we were talking about a couple of days ago, you know, vaccination. And I said, I got a big thick file folder here still sitting on my desk. I guess about an inch thick, probably 100 pages or more of material on vaccination. There are people that believe it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread, and other people that think that it's the worst thing that's ever happened to mankind since the Garden of Eden, or maybe since the flood. Now, I've come to a conclusion. I took the pros and cons of it, and I analyzed it, and I said, well, I'm going to come to a conclusion. And here's my conclusion. I'm going to avoid vaccinations like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But I wouldn't tell you to do that. How in the hell do I know what's good for you? Now, on the subject matter we took up here yesterday, we took up legal firearms for prohibited persons. I went through the 9 categories here of persons that are prohibited from owning guns. And I said, well, if you want my opinion, I wouldn't take the right to keep and bear arms from any of this category of persons. They're not a threat to me. They're not a threat to George Gordon. I don't think they're a threat to Dianne Feinstein or Barack Obama or anybody else. And when I hear somebody, you know, on television, they'll come along and say, we need to ban guns in America to make America safe. Oh, no, no, no. That's exactly backwards, wrong, and upside down. You see, the thing that makes you safe is that you have a gun. Now, I was out on the road the other day, and I didn't have a gun, and I felt a little naked. So I would suggest that if you're in your home, you know, you're going to feel a lot better if you have a gun in your house than if you don't have a gun. Test it. I mean, just go down and buy a gun. And you know, if you've never used one before, why don't you go into a gun store and say, could you direct me to a firing range? And you go to the firing range, and they'll have instructors in there. Now, you people all learned how to drive a car, didn't you? Okay. Now, you weren't born knowing how to drive a car, but now you drive a car, and you feel pretty confident and safe about it, don't you? Okay, you go in there, and you get yourself a gun instructor, shooting instructor, and you say, well, now, I've never fired a gun in my life, and I bought this gun. And then here it is. Now, will you teach me how to load it and how to use it and how to keep from killing myself or somebody else with it? And he'll do that. And, you know, if you've got average intelligence, you know, 75, 80, you know, something like that, you don't have to be a real genius. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar here. They're pretty simple little tools to use. And then he'll show you how to use that gun over there. And then take it home. And then sit in your home, you know, and watch TV, and then ask yourself, well, now that I know how to use this gun, what would I do if somebody broke through my door in a home invasion? And would you feel more comfortable with this gun that you now are trained and know how to use, know how to kill people with it? Guy breaks in my house, yeah, I can shoot him 3 times in the chest and kill him deader than a popcorn fart. Do you feel safer now, or do you feel safer without having a gun, without having any protection? And when some guy breaks in your house, all you can do is cringe in stark raving fear. I don't know what to do next. Please don't hurt me. No, it's your choice. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just sitting here telling you. I just feel a lot better having a gun here in the house than I would if I didn't have one. So, now let's take a look here at muzzle loaders, so-called black powder guns, loaded from the end where the bullet exits. They're all legal. Whether they're original or whether they're replicas, or regardless of the date of the manufacture. I happen to have one of those. It's a 1777. It's a French flintlock muzzle-loading gun. I've never used it. I've never fired it. Nobody's ever taught me how. It just sits here on the wall. It's an antique. It just sits up there. Nothing special about it. But there isn't any reason to believe that it won't fire. It was used in the Revolutionary War. Yeah, used in the Revolutionary War. Got it out of an estate in Virginia, And who knows how many, I don't know which side it was used on. I don't know if the British were using it against us or whether we were using it against the British. It was made in France, which doesn't preclude the English army, you know, from using them. So how many people do you think that gun killed back in the Revolutionary War? Or maybe even after that, maybe even in the War of 1812? You know, just thinking about it. I've wondered. It's a military gun. And how many people has it killed? Well, if it would kill people in 1777, won't it still kill people in 2010? Just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. It's a 50 caliber. I mean, it shoots a ball out of there like a ball bearing, you know. It's pretty big. I think if you get hit with that ball bearing, I think it'll go right through you. You know, so think about that for a minute. The cover stories that we hear are just that. They're cover stories for the purposes of getting us to believe something that we might otherwise not believe. Maybe it's the truth, and maybe it isn't the truth. Let's go on a little bit further. You can buy these black powder muzzle-loading guns by mail order. And the most practical antique guns for self-defense are the so-called cap-and-ball revolvers, originally made between 1840 and 1870. And they were used by people like Wyatt Earp and other gunslingers of the West. Numerous companies make and sell replicas of these six-shooters. Many can be had for $100 or less. And a good choice would be the 44 caliber, model 1860 Army. To use them, and you need powder, lead balls, wads, percussion caps, and all of these are readily available in gun shops and sporting goods stores. Now, while it's illegal for you to go in and buy a gun, you know, a 45 or a 32 or a 38 Smith and Wesson. You can go in here for $100 and you can buy an 1864 Colt cap and ball pistol. Then it's perfectly legal because it's an antique firearm, which was killing the Yankees and Confederates in 1864, and it's just as lethal today as it was the day it was made. Now, I happened to be in an antique store the other day, and they had a couple of antiques. They were Colt 44s, and I forgot the date on them now. They were early. They were 1860s or 70s. And for the pair, he wanted $3,000 a gun. That was $6,000 for the pair. A little over that, about $6,500. It was an odd number. Now, those are originals. Now, original old-timey guns now are going to be pretty pricey. What we're talking about here are replicas. Then they fire black powder. We'll see that as we progress along here in this article. You can't have this new smokeless powder. You got to have the smoky stuff. But hell, you can buy that stuff all. You know, we have displays here. They'll have here at Wilson Creek National Battlefield. They'll have two sides get together. One side dresses up like Yankees, and the other side dresses up like Confederates. And they're out there firing these muskets without the balls. They just fire them with the caps and the wads. But, you know, you get smoke pouring out of them. Those are not smokeless. So you want to tuck that one away in your heart. Now, there's a thing here called a cartridge firing gun. Between 1858 and 1898, millions of cartridge firing guns were made by gun manufacturers like Smith & Wesson, Colt, Ivor Johnson, Remington. Well, a Remington in calibers 22, 32, 38, 44, and 45, and dozens of others. So believe it or not, these original guns are not only so abundant that they can be purchased for $150 or less at virtually any gun show. They're totally exempt from federal gun control regulations, and that's because they're antique firearms. At most gun shows, you can find very workable 32 or 38 Smith & Wesson revolvers, 12-gauge double-barrel shotguns, 7mm German Mauser bolt-action military rifles, and many other firearms for less than $150. They're all made prior to 1899 and legal for anyone, even prohibited persons on the list, to possess. Now, this article was put out in 1999, so my guess would be, in 10 years, you know, you might have to double the price. You know, $150 guns might not be available. I happen to have some guns that came through here. There was one of them with a real odd caliber. I forgot what it is. It's an Egyptian army gun from about World War I, bolt action. Those old-timey army guns, and you know they're out there everywhere. From Austria, you know, take World War I, take back from World War I, back in, you know, the 1870s, 80s, and 90s. All those old-timey guns that were in Europe, different countries, French maybe, and my God, they had different calibers. Now those are cartridge guns. And those cartridge guns, if you've got the brass, you got to have the casings, you know, for the brass. You can buy the caps and the powder and the bullets for them. And you can just buy those at the local sporting goods store. And if they don't carry them in stock, then sometimes you have to order them. You know, there's some real odd caliber guns. I was over at the Davis Gun Museum one time. It's in Oklahoma. I'm trying to think of the name of the town there. It's just this side of Tulsa. Some little town there. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, they've got 25,000 guns in there. 25,000. I think they're all different. And most of them are old, you know. I mean, we're not talking about last year's model deer rifle. We're talking about old-timey guns. Come from all over the world. Some of them are very valuable. Some of them are, you know, common as pig tracks in a barnyard. And there's people out there that buy and sell and trade. I mean, if you went into any gun store and said, hey, I'm looking for an antique firearm, they'll find you one. And you want one manufactured before 1899. And if you're going to use a cartridge gun now, you're going to have to use black powder. And know that the rule now, this is the BATF rule, now it has to be an unusual or an odd caliber gun. 22 is as common as pig tracks in a barnyard, so you might want to avoid 22s. The only ammunition you can get for them, you'd have to, they're rimfire number one, but they're also smokeless. So maybe, you know, the original suggestion, cap and ball, 1875 Colt 44s, you know, for pistols. Now, let's take a look at how do you ascertain an antique status? Well, if you want a gun to be exempt from AFT regulations, be certain that whatever gun you acquire is, in fact, an exempt antique. Now, shady gun show vendors sometimes sell shotguns that they swear are antiques. Nevertheless, you may later discover a 1902 patent date stamped into the gun's barrel, which could subject you to serious problems should you be caught with it and the ATF find out. Okay, now watch out for that one. Again, you know, cover stories are just lies. Cover stories come from everybody. And a guy that wants to sell a gun, and you say, I'm looking for an antique firearm, and you go, oh, I've got one right here. Well, 1902 isn't antique. 1898 is antique. 1899, 1900, 1901, 1902, those are not antiques. You know, you're going to have to follow the law. And the trick to this is that you have to follow whatever the laws, rules, and regulations cover. I started off this series and I said, I think that these people that are on this list, these nine categories of people, I think is superfluous. It's nonsense. But then, you know, I didn't make the laws and those people are on the list. So if you're on one of those lists, well, you can't have a 1911-45. But you could have an 1895-45. I mean, I don't make these laws, I don't make these rules, and I'm not telling you to break the law, I'm telling you have to follow the law. And so the reason that I brought this subject up is that the cover story is that you're a felon and you can't have a gun. Well, that's not true. You may be a felon and you may be on the list, but you can have a gun, but you can't have a modern gun. You can only have antiques. Well, an antique's better than nothing. And those antiques worked real well in the Civil War. They worked real well in the Revolutionary War. It's true. Those old flintlocks, they don't load and shoot very fast. But, you know, you can load and fire those flintlocks every 30 seconds. Yeah. I was amazed when I heard that. Every 30 seconds. So you got some guy out here, you know, like an old frontiersman, you know, with one of these flintlock guns, and you say, well, you know, that thing will fire about every 5 minutes. Oh, no, 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 no. Those guys could fire that thing and reload it and fire it again every 30 seconds. That's two times a minute. Now, those old bolt-action guns, you know, they're pretty fast, too. You can load and fire one of those about every... 3 to 5 seconds. Bolt action. When I was a little kid, I had a 22 bolt action. And, it, you know, by today's standards, you know, when you're firing a semi-automatic, it seems to be pretty slow, but they're not all that slow. Held 15 rounds, and I could fire those 15 rounds off in about a minute. You know, just bolt action. About a minute, 60 seconds, I could fire off 15. Now, with a semi-automatic, I can fire off 15 rounds in about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 seconds. Just fast as you pull the trigger, bang, 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 you know. Now, you can't have those. You're going to be prohibited from having it. So put that one out of your mind. And these smokeless cartridges, put those out of your mind. You ain't going to get that. But that doesn't mean that you have to be disarmed. So let's go on and look a little bit more here. If you want a gun exempt from ATF regulations, make sure that it's an antique. That may take a little doing on your part, make sure. Making sure that the gun that you're buying is, in fact, an antique may take some research. Now, a good book to have is called Flederman's Guide to Antique American Firearms Under Their Values, Volume 3, in its Smith & Wesson section, for example, it lists serial number runs along with manufacture dates. For example, any .32 caliber Smith & Wesson double-action first model revolver made in 1880 only had serial numbers 1 to 30. The second model, made between 1880 and 1882, had serial numbers 31 through 22,172. The third model, manufactured between 1882 and 83, had serial numbers 22,173 to serial number 43,405. Therefore, any Smith & Wesson 32 caliber double action revolver with a serial number of 43,405 or below is a legal antique as it was made between 1880 and 1883. Another example would be the model 1898 Craig U.S. Military 30 caliber bolt action magazine rifle made between 1898 and 1903 with serial numbers 110,000 to 480,000, according to Flederman's serial numbers below 152,670 are considered antique under federal firearms law. Some guns have the manufacturer year stamped into the frames. For example, a model 1895 Mauser 7mm military bolt action magazine rifle. All right, now let me pause here for a moment and make an observation. You could have a gun that was in a production run past 1899. It would fit into the exemption of the law as long as the serial number would show that the year that it was manufactured was before 1899. Why don't you be on the safe side and make sure that, you know, cutoff date is 1895. Buy a gun before that. I've got one here. It's an 1872 single shot 3240 octagon barrel buffalo gun made by Winchester. That's an antique firearm. It fires at 1,200 feet a second. I mean, it is so slow. If I fired that thing a quarter of a mile, you could duck before the bullet got there. If I wasn't using smokeless powder, and I fired that thing, you would see the smoke from the gun and duck, and you could duck faster than the bullet could hit you. Isn't that amazing? Now, that's a legal gun, but you know, back in the 1870s when they made that gun, people were out shooting buffalo with them every day. If it'll kill a buffalo, it'll kill just about anything, won't it? So tuck that one away in your heart, and let me give you your reminder that we're listening to the Law Hour and editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, do not mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about antique firearms right now. Remember, the cover story the government uses is that, hey, if you're on this list over here, you're barred from heaven again. Yeah, that's the story. And that's true. It's true. It's not the whole truth, but that statement is true. But there's a but-cept in there. And government never tells you, well, I shouldn't say never, but, you know, very rarely will tell you when there's a but-cept in there, that there's an exception that you can take advantage of and live your life. They want you to believe that there's no exceptions. Let's take taxes as an illustration. Everybody has to pay the income tax. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What if I'm retired on Social Security and I'm 92 years old and I haven't worked for 30 years? Do I have to pay income tax? Well, the answer to that's no. Well, then isn't that an exception? Well, yeah, that's an exception. Okay, well, what if I'm 15 and I'm living at home and I don't have a job and I don't have any income? Do I have to pay income tax? Do I have to file a tax return? Well, no, you wouldn't, because, you see, you don't have a job and you don't have any income and you're still living at home, and so. But everybody else has to file and pay. Yeah, everybody else has to file and pay. That's what they tell you. That's the cover story. Everybody does it. Everybody has to do it. Well, wait a minute. If I'm old and I'm not working, or I'm young and I'm not working, then I don't have any income, do I? Well, yeah, that's right. You wouldn't have any income. Well, let's try it this way. What if I was 27 years old and I didn't have any income? Then you know what they do for their cover story? They say, yeah, but how would you live without any income? Wait a minute. Let's cover the question that I'm asking first. The question that I'm asking is, if I was 27 years old, I didn't have a job, just like the old guy that's 92 and the kid that's 15. Would I have any income and would I have to file a tax return? And the answer to that is no. No, you wouldn't have to file or pay income tax because you're not having any income. Right. Your question, how would you live without income, that's another question. And the answer to that is very well, thank you. You see, I'm living without any income, and I'm living very well, thank you. I'm not complaining. I'm not on the dole. I'm not on Social Security. I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And I'm not living any poorer today than I ever lived in my life. I think I live better than King Solomon. For instance, this morning I had strawberries. Strawberries in October is unusual. That's true, they were frozen, but I don't think King Solomon had frozen strawberries, and I don't think he ate strawberries out of season. I can have strawberries 12 months a year. I think I live better than King Solomon, and he had a whole lot more money than I'm ever going to have. So when somebody says to me, you know, how do you live without income, I tell them very plainly, very well, thank you. Now, before we had income, we had property. Property's never been assessed or taxed in this country. Go to Diefendorf versus Calais. Forgot the number on that one. I think it's Idaho, 1932, page 51. Supreme Court of Idaho, 1932, Diefendorf versus Calais. Property's never been assessed or taxed in this country. So if you would deal in property and stay out of income, you know, you could do a lot better. Now you're not going to find some government agent over here that's going to tell you that, but if we were to think about that for a minute and combine that with a case, there's a case here called the, and I'll come to this and I'll dig it out for you. It's Stewart versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce. In fact, I don't have it on my list here. I'm going to write that down, Stewart. Stewart versus Chinese. Listen to this. The Supreme Court, or no, it wasn't either. It was the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals out in San Francisco, 1929, comes up with this conclusion. They said, hey, listen, Congress does not assume to deal with non-taxpayers. So that tells us a little piece of the story. You got taxpayers, and then you got non-taxpayers. Congress doesn't assume to deal with non-taxpayers. Well, then Congress must assume to deal with taxpayers. What's the difference between a taxpayer and a non-taxpayer? Do non-taxpayers wear long robes and turbans, or do they dress with buckskin and fringe? Do you know? Well, how would you recognize one if you saw one? Are they extinct, or do they still exist today? If we could identify what a non-taxpayer looks like, maybe we could become one of those. You ever stop and think about that? So when you hear these cover stories that say it's the law, you have to do it. You know, I've listened to that all my life, and sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's the law, and sometimes we have to do it. But you know, a lot of the time, in fact, I'm going to tell you it's most of the time, that isn't the law. That's what people tell you the law is, but when you ask them, like with the census, where is that law? They don't know where it's at. They believe that the census law requires that you participate in the census. They don't know that there's an exemption in there. People that are trying to get you to get vaccinated, they say it's the law. They don't know there's an exception written in there. Well, what if you could fulfill that exception and you wouldn't be required? And if that's what you want to do, then why don't you avail yourself of it? So now we're talking about firearms here. There's nine categories of people. Now, most people in the United States can still buy, own, use, and have and possess a firearm. Not every firearm. I mean, you know, you can't have mortars and M60 tanks and things like that. You know, there's some limitations. Fully automatic guns and things like that. But, you know, most of these guns, most of us can have. But some of us are getting caught between the cracks here, and we're unable to own a modern firearm. But there's an exception written into the law here. And I just wanted to tell you the but-seps that come into play here. And so what we were talking about here before we took the break was if you had a model 1898 Craig, U.S. military, 30 caliber bolt action magazine rifle, which was manufactured between 1898 and 1903. The serial numbers run between 110,000 and 480,000. Well, you couldn't have one made in 1899, 1900, 01, 02, and 03, but those that were made in 1898, you could. And that serial number is below 152,670. So if it was anything like 110,000 to 152,670, and the way you find that out is you get a copy of this Fladerman's Guide to Antique American Firearms and Their Values. Now, if you get that book, where are you going to find one of those? I'll bet you the Bass Pro Shop has it. I'll bet you if you went into a gun shop, they'd have it or tell you where you could get one. Isn't that special? All right. Now, other guns have no serial numbers at all and therefore require further research. For example, if you wanted to buy an apparent but unconfirmed antique firearm from a gun shop, you could always put down a $20 deposit to hold the gun. Then send a complete description of the firearm to the ATF's Firearms Technology Branch. Did you get that? Send a letter to the ATF Firearms Technology Branch and ask for a free classification decision. If the ATF classifies the gun as antique, then buy it. And if not, then don't buy it. See how simple that is? Now, here's a little piece that'll work for you, so that this doesn't come back and bite you in the butt at some later date. Anytime that you've got an antique firearm, if you would write this down, this is called the BATF Firearms Technology Branch. That'll be in Washington, D.C., asking for a free classification. Just do that to any and every gun that you want, and you'll get a letter back that says, yes, yes, that gun is an antique. Okay, now, if you're ever bothered by anybody, you've got documentation from the government itself, from the agency of government that classified it for you as an antique. Make sure, now, that when you do that, that you get the right serial number. Don't screw up now on your serial numbers or the brand of the gun, because there's a cutoff date here. Remember, it's 1899. And if you come up with one now that's 1899, 1900, 1901, it's close but no cigar. Remember the story a little earlier I told you yesterday. This guy's got a gun, and it's rusted shut. It's not even operable. But because he's on the list, hey, the guy goes to jail. And then the cops say, "What? Hey, it's just our story. I mean, it's just our job." That's his cover story. I'm just doing my job, arresting this guy. He's not a threat to anybody. He's not a threat to you or me or the cop or anybody else. The reason that they're doing this is to fill up beds in prison. The reason that we have 2 million people locked up in jail is so that we can fill up the beds. It's a part of the law enforcement growth industry. It's a big business. Makes a lot of money. Just like drugs make a lot of money. Now, you don't have to buy drugs, and you don't have to participate in the law enforcement growth industry. You can educate yourself, and you can stay out of a whole lot more trouble than you can get out of. So just use that one as a philosophy of life. I don't want to get out of trouble. I want to stay out of trouble. So get a letter from BATF. They'll give it to you. Now, if you don't want ATF knowing your business, for a fee, you can get an antiquity decision from any number of antique firearms experts. For example, for $20, Smith & Wesson will give you a letter stating the exact shipping date of any antique firearm made by them if you provide a description and serial number. And then finally, if you buy a cartridge-firing antique firearm by mail order, you should feel secure that it really is a pre-1899 gun. Unlike fly-by-night gun show vendors, mail-order gun dealers are closely watched, and they know that any mail-order fraud will be quickly prosecuted by the ATF. So that's a protection. If you bought this over the internet, mail order, and you specifically bought an antique gun and it was represented to you as such, it would be mail fraud if they sent you something that was newer than 1899. It would be an affirmative defense. I didn't intend to buy a gun that was illegal. I intended to buy a legal gun, and this guy defrauded me. I'm the victim. That's an affirmative defense. All right, let's try a couple more here. Ammunition. If you're going to have a gun, you got to have bullets. Without the ammunition, the gun's no good. So, ammunition can be a problem. And the same statute, 18 U.S. Code 922G and 924E, that outlaws prohibited persons from possessing modern guns, also prohibits them from possessing ammunition for those modern guns. So a guy in New England just got 20 years for possession of a single 9mm cartridge. One single 9mm cartridge. And this guy goes to jail for 20 years. Again, anybody that holds one crummy cartridge is not a threat to anybody. But, you know, here's the law, and the law has been written up. And so they're going to interpret the law to the gnat's whisker. Why? So they can lock the guy up for 20 years because it gives him a customer occupying a bed in the prison. He's worth $50,000 a year. If you want to know how much this guy is worth, take $50,000 a year times 20. That's $1 million. That conviction nets the government $1 million. Why? Well, because the taxpayers are going to pay to store that guy there. That's $1 million worth of revenue. They're sorry they didn't get two, that they got $2 million. It doesn't make any difference to them what the costs are. And that's because these costs are borne by the taxpayer. And the taxpayer is an unlimited, deep pockets resource for every politician, every government bureaucrat, and every government agency that's in existence. That's why you ought to think about creating any more of these government agencies over here, because every time you create one, like the Department of Homeland Security, $37 billion a year, you got another liability there you got to take care of. And you got all these new agencies that are coming up in the Barack Obama administration. They've got new plans for all kinds of new agencies. Got a new one. It's going to be way bigger than Homeland Security. They got this Barack Obama healthcare initiative bill through, and so, oh God, that thing is worth trillions of dollars. That's enough to bankrupt the country. That'll keep you people occupied and your attention off of the real problems and the real issues of life for about the next 10 years. And they got new taxes coming on that one. I don't know what the numbers are going to be, but it's going to be big. I would guess, based upon what I've seen so far, I haven't seen final numbers, but that the estimates, this Obama tax initiative on the healthcare bill will be the biggest tax increase in our history so far. And we've had some big ones. This is going to top them all. All right, going on here now with ammunition. The statute and the ATF's implementation regulation, Title 27, Code of Federal Regulations, Section 178.11, defines ammunition as ammunition or cartridge cases, primers, bullets, or propellant powder designed for use in any firearm other than an antique firearm. Now, you should underline that, because, you see, other than antique. So here's a butt sept, a great big butt sept. That's what we're looking for here, is butt septs. Now, this is no problem for muzzle loaders. See, the ATF concedes that muzzle loader paraphernalia is without question designed for use in none other than antiques. But when it comes to ammunition, cartridges, even obsolete cartridges, the ATF legal counsel takes the position. It may be absurd, but he takes the position, which has never been upheld in any published court decision, that designed for use really means merely suitable for use or otherwise usable in a post-1898 gun subject to ATF control. Now, to give you an example, the ATF has administrative rules, and they've ruled that a 50 caliber Remington Army centerfire cartridge designed for use in antique Remington rolling block pistols is nevertheless modern ammunition because it's shootable in currently made Sharps replica rifles chambered for the 50 to 70 U.S. military rifle cartridge. Now, that position, we believe, is ridiculous, since pistol cartridges are not designed for use in rifles that are chambered for a different caliber cartridge. But ATF ruled similarly for 32 and 38 Smith & Wesson black powder loaded centerfire cartridges, even though such custom-made cartridges are obviously designed for use in antiques only. This administrative ruling has not been tested in court, since modern revolvers made since 1899 that chamber these cartridges use smokeless powder rather than obsolete black powder. So this writer believes that they may not constitute ammunition under the federal law definition. So if you want to test that, you get what's known as a declaratory judgment. You just walk into federal court with a declaratory judgment and ask the question. Bring the ATF in as the defendant, and then have the judge rule on the definition. So you don't have any court rulings on it. You don't have anybody who used it as a defense and then won the case and the Supreme Court said. So in that case, then, if you want to split hairs and you want to go against the ATF ruling, well, then you're going to have to get an administrative decision by ATF. That would do. Or you have to get a court order, a court ruling from a declaratory judgment from a federal district judge. That takes a little more doing. But as you can see, it's easier to just go with the cap and balls. I mean, you can stick within the realm of cartridges. Now, you can use cartridges. They have to be filled with black powder, and they have to be unusual calibers. Like 50 caliber is pretty common. You know, it isn't real common, but it's out there. But what about 49 caliber or 47 caliber? See, 44 is pretty common. 45 is common. What about 46, 47, 48, and 49? And there are calibers of guns that meet all of those. Caliber simply means the size of the bullet. I think it's 49 millimeters, 50 millimeters, 44 millimeters, or whatever the size is. So that being the case, then, I happen to pick one of those up. I don't know what the exact size is on this Egyptian gun, but it's an odd number. And I've forgotten now. You know, it's a, I don't know if it's a, there's 30-06, 300 is common. Then there's 30-06, this is 30-07, 8 or 9 or something like that. It's an old military gun, you know. Now, when that comes up, you want to make sure now that it's antique and get an opinion now from either the ATF or from a certified gun expert. Now, that could be the Davis Gun Museum. It could be some other gun museum. It's got to be somebody that can be recognized. Test that one. But don't take chances now. Remember that these guys want to lock you up. If it's at all possible, we're going to lock you up. And that's because you're worth $50,000 a year in the lockup. These laws that are being passed are not being passed for the protection of the health, safety, and welfare of the public. They're being passed so that we have an excuse, so that we have a cover story, so that we can say, well, this guy's got this, and he's in violation of the law. He's an ex-felon. He's on the list. He's dangerous. And we're protecting the public by locking him up. Hell, the public has to pay that $50,000 a year. These guys aren't paying $50,000 out of their pockets to lock you up to protect the public from you. They're taxing the public to lock you up on a pretext so that they can make the $50,000 to pay their salaries and to pay for all their expenses. And that's called the law enforcement growth industry. I've done a series of programs on that in the past, explained it fully. It's a business, nothing more, nothing less. You get caught up in it, and you'll be grist for the law enforcement growth industry. But that doesn't mean that you can't live your life, doesn't mean that you can't have a gun. You can have a shotgun, and you can go out shooting ducks, but you're going to have an old shotgun. You know, if you think you're going to have some new Remington, you know, that fires automatic, you know, or something like that, now you can forget that. And you're going to have to use smoke powder, not smokeless. You got to have the smoke powder, the old stuff. That's where the antiques come in. We'll fill this or finish this off the next time when we're talking about ammunition here and some of the pitfalls that you may run into. We can avoid more trouble than we can get out of. So let's see if we can stay within the scope of the law and still live our lives at the same time. Hey, I'm about running out of time here, so I'm going to give you a reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio schedule, radio log schedule, and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the final bell, so I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, so until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.